60 Books, presented by Store Consulting and Coaching. Every July, roughly 1,200 new cadets arrive at West Point for 7 weeks of training the Academy nicknames Beast Barracks. These are people who survived years of selection. And every year, a meaningful number of them quit before the summer ends. The Academy has an admissions formula built from test scores, class rank, leadership, and physical fitness, and that formula does not predict who quits. A researcher shows up with a 12-question survey that takes about 3 minutes. It does predict it. Today, Grit, by Angela Duckworth. In two sentences, sustained achievement comes less from talent than from passion and perseverance held steadily over years. Effort counts twice because it builds the skill and then it produces the result. From the reading room, this is 60 Books. I'm Miles. 60 of the best management books of the last 100 years, one per episode, read for leaders and teams who think differently, and for work where AI is now part of the job. Nora, this is the book with the largest gap between how famous it is and how well it has held up.
And the gap is documented rather than a matter of opinion, which is what makes this episode worth doing.
Start with the research.
Duckworth's early work looked at settings where dropping out was measurable and consequential. West Point, rookie teachers in tough schools, salespeople, and the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which is a beautiful natural experiment because you can measure hours of practice, verbal ability, and outcome all at once.
And the finding.
In each case, her grit measure predicted who stayed and who finished, and it did so on top of, or sometimes in place of, the measures the institution was already using. At the Bee, the grittier children practiced more, and the kind of practice they did, alone and deliberate rather than pleasant, predicted how far they went.
Define grit as she does.
Passion and perseverance for long-term goals. And she is specific that passion here does not mean enthusiasm or intensity. It means consistency, caring about the same thing for years.
The formula.
Talent times effort equals skill. Skill times effort equals achievement. Hence her line that effort counts twice. It is not a real equation, and she says so, but the point is that talent is a rate of improvement rather than a destination.
The author, because her biography is doing work in this book.
Angela Duckworth, born 1970, daughter of Chinese immigrants. She studied neurobiology at Harvard, won a Marshall Scholarship, went to Oxford, and then went into management consulting at McKinsey.
And left.
For teaching. She taught mathematics to seventh graders in public schools, and it was there that she noticed that her best students were not always the ones with the highest measured ability. She went back for a doctorate at Penn at 32, under Martin Seligman.
And there is a line from her childhood that runs through the whole book.
Her father used to tell her she was no genius, repeatedly. It clearly stung, and it is the reason the book is fixated on the question of whether talent is the thing that matters.
And then the punchline.
In 2013, she was awarded a MacArthur Fellowship, which everyone calls the Genius Grant. She has said, dryly, that she thought of her father when the call came.
The book.
2016, enormous bestseller, and she also founded a nonprofit called Character Lab. And I want to say clearly that Duckworth is a serious researcher who has been more honest about the limits of her own work than almost anyone on this shelf. That matters for what comes next.
Take me through the structure.
Two halves, growing grit from the inside out and from the outside in. The inside out half has four psychological assets in developmental order: interest, practice, purpose, and hope.
Interest first.
And this is the part most people skip, which is a shame because her claim is that passion is discovered rather than chosen. It comes from a period of unstructured play and exposure, then a triggering encounter, then years of development. Nobody arrives knowing.
Practice.
Deliberate practice, from Erickson, which we covered in episode 4. Stretch goal, full concentration, immediate feedback, repetition with refinement. And her honest addition is that this kind of practice does not feel good while you are doing it.
Purpose.
The idea that interest becomes durable when it connects to other people's well-being. Her claim is that gritty people almost universally describe their work as serving something beyond themselves, and that this is what sustains them past the point where enjoyment would have run out.
Hope.
Not optimism that things will go well, but the belief that your own effort can improve your future, which leans directly on the next book we are doing.
There are two more ideas I want before the outside in half.
The first is the naturalness bias, and it is the most uncomfortable finding in the book. The psychologist Chi Yung-tse ran studies with professional musicians. They were given recordings alongside descriptions of the performer, one framed as a natural talent, the other as someone who got there through hard work.
And the experts preferred
the natural, consistently, even though they had said in the abstract that they valued effort more. Their stated values and their actual judgments went in opposite directions, and they did not notice.
Which is directly our territory.
It is, because it explains a specific and common experience. A neurodivergent professional who visibly works at something the rest of the room finds effortless gets read as less able, even when the output is equal or better. The visible effort is itself the penalty. And Say's point is that the people applying that penalty will sincerely deny doing it.
The second idea.
The goal hierarchy. Duckworth argues that gritty people have a pyramid, one top-level goal that is essentially permanent, a small number of mid-level goals serving it, and many low-level goals that are disposable. And the crucial move is that low-level goals are supposed to be abandoned freely when they stop serving the level above.
So consistency is only required at the top.
Which quietly contradicts her own scale. The questionnaire penalizes changing projects. The theory says changing projects is correct as long as the top goal holds. A person who has tried six careers in service of one durable question is gritty under the theory and ungritty under the measurement.
And that resolves something for our audience.
It gives a person with a scattered-looking history a legitimate question to ask. Not have I stuck at things, but is there one thing underneath all of them? Very often there is, and nobody has ever asked.
And the outside in half.
Parenting, which she frames as supportive and demanding at once rather than one or the other. A rule she calls the hard thing rule, where everyone in the family does something difficult that requires deliberate practice. You may not quit on a bad day, and you may quit at a natural stopping point. And cultures of grit, where she looks at organizations that make persistence the identity rather than the instruction.
Now the neurodivergent read, and I want to start with the measurement, because this is where it gets sharp.
The grit scale has two facets, perseverance of effort and consistency of interest. And the consistency of interest items are things like, I often set a goal and later choose to pursue a different one. New ideas and projects sometimes distract me from previous ones. My interests change from year to year.
Read those again slowly, because that is a screening instrument.
They are close to diagnostic items for ADHD. The scale is measuring interest shifting and scoring it as a character deficiency. And a person with ADHD taking that questionnaire honestly will score low on grit while possibly having ferocious perseverance inside whatever currently holds their attention.
And what does the evidence say about that facet?
This is the part I find genuinely satisfying. In 2017, Crede, Tynan, and Harms published a meta-analysis in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. 584 effect sizes, 88 samples, 66,807 people.
And?
The two facets do not perform equally. Perseverance of effort correlated with academic performance at about 0.26, consistency of interest at about 0.10.
So the facet that penalizes neurodivergence is the facet that barely predicts anything.
It is the weakest part of the construct, and it is the part doing the moral work. If you drop it, grit becomes perseverance, which is real and which many neurodivergent people have in abundance when the conditions are right.
What else did that meta-analysis find?
Three things, and together they are close to a demolition. The higher order structure of grit was not confirmed, meaning the two facets do not behave like one trait. Grit's correlation with performance is modest overall, around 0.18 for academic performance. And grit correlates with conscientiousness, the long-established personality trait, at about 0.84.
0.84.
Which in this field means you may be measuring the same thing with a new name. Their conclusion was that grit adds essentially no predictive power for academic performance beyond conscientiousness, and that interventions designed to build grit are likely to have weak effects.
So what survives?
Perseverance of effort, which was already known and which the meta-analysis found predicts performance even after controlling for conscientiousness. Interest as a discovered rather than chosen thing, which is well supported elsewhere. And purpose and hope, which are not really grit claims at all.
Say the rest of the neurodiversity turn, because the measurement problem is not the only one.
The bigger risk is what grit becomes in a manager's hands. It is a moral vocabulary for effort, and moral vocabularies get used to deny support. If persistence is a virtue and you are struggling, then the diagnosis is insufficient virtue, and the remedy is trying harder, which is precisely what a great many neurodivergent adults have been told since childhood while trying extremely hard.
To be fair to her.
To be entirely fair, Duckworth has publicly objected to grit being used for school accountability and has resisted the idea that it should be scored and ranked. The misuse is not her design. It is what happens when a construct with moral flavor meets an institution that wants a number.
There is a cultural chapter too,
where she looks at organizations that build persistence into identity rather than instruction. A professional football team under Pete Carroll, the finishing culture at West Point, and the Finnish concept of sisu, a national word for stubborn endurance.
And the mechanism she claims.
That it is easier to become gritty by joining a group where that is simply what people do than by resolving to be gritty alone. Which is probably the most defensible claim in the book, because the behavior is being carried by the environment rather than by daily willpower, which is the argument this show has landed on since episode 2.
And a caution for us.
The same mechanism produces the strongest pressure to mask. A culture built on visible endurance rewards people who never appear to struggle, and the cost of appearing to struggle is highest for the person who already stands out.
What is worth keeping?
Three things. Interest precedes perseverance, which for an interest-driven attention system is not a nice idea but the entire operating principle. Purpose sustains effort past enjoyment, which is true and useful. And the hard thing rule contains a good distinction. You may not quit on a bad day, but you may quit at a natural stopping point. That separates leaving because today is unbearable from leaving because the fit is wrong, and the second one is what episode 7 called match quality.
The tier.
A serious researcher's popular book, resting on a construct that a large meta-analysis found to be mostly conscientiousness wearing a better outfit, with one facet that survives and one that penalizes exactly the people this show is about.
The recap in this show's frame. Grit says passion and perseverance held over years beat talent. For a neurodivergent leader, or one leading neurodivergent people, the operating instructions are these. Keep perseverance of effort and discard consistency of interest, because the evidence says the second one barely predicts anything while punishing a difference. Treat interest as the precondition rather than the reward, because that is where perseverance actually comes from. Watch for grit language being used as a reason not to change conditions, and keep the distinction between quitting on a hard day and leaving a bad fit, because only one of those is a failure. And AI.
Grit's mechanism is sustained effort, and the useful question is which parts of effort are worth sustaining.
Go.
Deliberate practice needs immediate feedback, and that has always been the scarce ingredient, because it usually required a coach. A model can supply an approximation of that instantly, at any hour, for a great many skills. That is a real change to Erickson's conditions rather than a convenience.
And the interest side.
The book says interest develops through exposure and a triggering encounter. Lowering the cost of exploring a new field, of getting a competent overview of something before you know whether you care, makes that exposure period cheaper. Which matters most for the person who cannot get access to the field any other way, as we said about hours in episode 4.
The dangers.
2. The first is that grit's whole claim is about tolerating the unglamorous middle, and a tool that removes the unglamorous middle may also remove the thing that was building the capacity. That is the same caution we gave about scaffolding in episode 8. And the second is subtler. If you never have to persist, you never learn that you can, and hope in Duckworth's sense is built from evidence about yourself.
The usual caution.
Evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early and mostly practitioner reports. Promising practice, not established fact.
Nora, thank you.
Of course, thank you, Miles.
That is Grit. Next time on 60 Books, Mindset by Carol Dweck, the book that gave every school in the country a poster, and what happened when the effect was measured at scale. I'm Miles. See you then.